Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, folks. It's Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. And I'm broadcasting to you this morning from Billings, Montana. Signing books up here at the Montana Fair. Seeing lots of our old reader friends. Lots and lots of new readers up here. And it's been fun. This is an event that we have not been invited to or attended before. So it's been new and different. Been brutally hot. I mean, broiling hot. Oh, my. And I got to take 2 days off from this event and kind of go over and see my kids and grandkids and some of our ranches in Montana, all of which were looking good, despite all sorts of smoke. I mean, there are forest fires popping up everywhere, and things are tinder dry in the high country. Those of you listeners who are out west right now, or those of you listeners who are elsewhere but coming west for a vacation this summer, be ultra extra special careful. It's at the point right now, I can tell you, where a spark from a shovel on a rock, a hot exhaust, can start a huge forest fire and wildfire. So, way careful, folks. Anyway, I have a little story for you tonight. I actually have two stories, and we'll get into that because I know you like my stories. And we are going to cover this morning all sorts of things. I mean, there's really too many things to kind of give you my usual prelude at the beginning of the show. We're going to cover X, Y, Z, etc. Let me just tell you, in a very broad brush, we're going to be talking a little bit about this increasingly exposed corruption at the DOJ and the FBI, and unfortunately the incompetence of the FBI once again manifesting itself in New Mexico, which you may not or may have kind of heard a little bit about. Pretty scary stuff. We're going to be talking about the tariffs. We're going to talk about the emerging markets and the fact that there are several emerging market countries that are beginning to stumble on their debt payments and their ability to pay debt, which could have detrimental worldwide economic effects. I'll explain to you why. And it actually has something to do with the United States Federal Reserve. That's right, you betcha. And also has to do with the policies of the last three, not Trump, presidents in terms of our foreign trades deficit, which has been running $800 billion a year. In other words, America has been paying and shelling out $800 billion more per year than we have been receiving or selling to other countries. And that adds up. And it's really a subsidy to emerging markets. You know, it's kind of a redistribution of wealth. It's a good old Barack Obama deal. Although, unfortunately, I can't blame Barry for all of it because it started, you know, 30 years ago. A lot of it under Clinton, some of it under Bush Sr. And, by the way, some of it goes all the way back to Nixon with China. I'm going to give you a little background on that. The Chinese military is flexing its muscle. You haven't heard people that. I mean, it's only like world stability, world dominance, you know, communism against freedom. But the press doesn't want to cover that. They'd rather cover the Paul Manafort trial, which we're going to speak very briefly about. And we're going to talk about that corrupt scumbag Bruce Orr and his corrupt scumbag wife Nellie Orr at the Department of Justice, who colluded with Russians, a British foreign agent, Christopher Steele, and Fusion GPS. And we have found out this week, you'll love this, gee, they got rich doing it. Imagine that. There was a money quotient. The progressive Democrats succumbed to money. Gee, I thought they were like, spread the wealth. Oh, yeah, spread the wealth into their own pocket. We're going to talk about tech censorship. Alex Jones and InfoWars getting banned in a collective action by YouTube, Facebook, Apple, Google, you name it. Very, very scary trend, folks. And once again, points up, as I'm going to talk a little bit about, the absolute need to break up these tech companies. I'm not a government man. But in this case, these tech companies collectively are worth about $5, $6 trillion. That, folks, is more than most countries in the world, like 95% of the countries in the world. They have far too much power, far too much reach, far too much control. They are monopolies. And most importantly, they are monopolies over information, which affects our First Amendment rights, as you can see very clearly, ever more so, ever increasingly. This is a dangerous, dangerous, dangerous trend. They need to be dismantled, just like AT&T was when they were, at that time, for what communications then was, becoming what Google and Apple and Facebook and YouTube and Twitter have become today. We're going to talk a little bit about the Manafort judge and the crazy motion that CNN, AP, and some other wacky left-wing news organizations filed concerning that trial that he denied. We're going to be talking about a little bit about oil, the price of oil, and oil markets. And we're going to be talking about a whole host of other things. Some of them, I guarantee you, they're going to make your eyes cross, your hair curl, and, you know, they'll give you a queasy feeling in the pit of your stomach. You almost can't even believe some of this stuff. And we're going to be talking a little bit about the upcoming midterm elections. So, this is going to be less than the normal two-hour show. Stations will take up programming elsewhere. You guys will like that. They got some good stuff planned. And in the meantime, we're going to kind of stick with our, shall we say, our summer schedule. Because I have limited time to broadcast. You have limited time to listen. So these have been, over the last 3-4 weeks, information-packed shows, kind of condensed, rat-a-tat-tat. Oh, gee, that might upset the gun control people. I'm sorry, bang, bang, bang. Oh, that doesn't work either. How about boom, boom? No, that doesn't work either. Oh, I'm so politically incorrect. We're going to be talking a little about gun control, too. By the way, that was just a lead-in. All right, let's get started. So first of all, the stories. So story number one begins with a book signing. And this family comes up to the book signing station. And they obviously wanted all three books. And by the way, there's a schedule, folks, coming out for books 4 and 5, so stay tuned. Pretty soon, finally, finally. But this family comes up. They obviously didn't have a lot of money. I mean, obviously. And, there was, I think, two sisters probably in their, I'd say, late 40s, early 50s. And there was some of their kids, probably in their teens, and then some of their older kids and a grandkid or two. And then there was the matriarch of the family, who was 84, I believe. She was a pistol, and a delightful pistol. She wanted these books so bad, she was beside herself. That's how badly she wanted the books. And her poor kids, the two sisters, the 40-somethings, they kind of looked at one another, and I could tell, you know, in that silent eye contact communication they had, that they were both kind of questioning one to the other as to, do you have enough? I don't know. Do you have enough? Can we pull? I mean, you could just hear the conversation in their heads without them saying a word. In the meantime, this cute old lady is, like, all over these books. So I gave them a book one, didn't charge them for it, and they bought books 2 and 3. Anyway, flash forward one day, and here comes the little old lady and the whole family entourage. She comes running up to me, and she throws her arm around me. We actually have a videotape of this, by the way. Some of the publisher staff who helps me at this book signing videotaped this whole scene, and I think we'll probably put it on the Right Side Radio website. It'll certainly be on the Threads West website and the Threads West Facebook page. And she was almost in tears. She was so delighted. She told me she had stayed up all night reading book one. She couldn't put it down. And she just wanted to thank me for making it possible to be reading the series and having the three books signed. And it was, you know, it was very touching and was very heartwarming. And it reminded me, and I've given you several stories like this over the last year or two. It reminded me of how important it is that you do something. And maybe you can't do it every day, but you do something once or twice a week, at least, that affects positively someone else's life. First of all, it's a big deal to them. And secondly, it's going to make you feel great. So that's story number one. I was quite gratified as a human and as an author. Story number two. So for story number two, let me give you a little backdrop. You know, I don't get to see my grandkids all that often. And admittedly, that's because, you know, that family is very, very busy. I mean, they have all sorts of stuff going on. They have their jobs. They have their businesses. The kids have their school and what have you. And I am very busy, right? I got the books and I got the ranch and all sorts of stuff, the radio show. So the bottom line is I just don't get to spend the time I'd like to spend with them. They came down and visited in Wyoming this summer. We had a great 3-4 days, kind of little family get together. And it was terrific. And I decided, you know, I could have signed every day up at this Montana fair, but decided that I would take 2 days off and I would go over and see them at the Montana ranches where they live. And I did that. And my granddaughter's birthday is in about a week, so I brought her over some presents. And my grandson is an avid fisherman, great little outdoorsman, and kind of a natural athlete. You know, he's one of those people, whatever he picks up, he can do. Yeah, we all know them, you know, they're rare, but they exist. I mean, every one of us knows somebody like that. No matter what you throw at them, they can handle it. No matter what new skill or sport or athletic twist and turn you want to introduce them to, it's like a matter of minutes, and they're able to do it sometimes better than you. It's just the way they are. And he's one of them. Anyway, I took him fishing. We had a great time. He caught some nice fish. And, you know, we had a little, I wouldn't call it a birthday party for my granddaughter, but it was a kind of a birthday dinner, and she got to open some presents that I brought, etc. And I got to tell you, and I was able to talk with my daughter, my son-in-law, and I was able to have dinner with my son, and it was terrific. I mean, it was a absolutely terrific 2 days. And it reminded me of how important those types of connections, family and or close friends, which are, you know, few and far between, how important those connections are. So I just want to urge you, that wasn't much of a story, I suppose, but it really is kind of a tale. It's a personal sharing. And I want to remind all of you who are listening here either today or over the course of who knows how long, since you can listen to these podcasts forever, and lots of people do. Any time that you can take to spend with a loved one, a family member, a close, close friend, do so. Don't put it off. You know, life has a way of stepping in and interfering with things. I had an uncle, this is part of the story, had an uncle I was very close to. He, along with my dad, taught me to hunt, trap, and several other things. Just absolutely a great guy, Uncle Harold. And one of the things Uncle Harold loved was the West. He lived back in Michigan. And I kept meaning, kind of when I got out on my own, you know, 17, 18, whatever it was, I kept meaning to invite him out to go, a week of fishing or a week of hunting or whatever, just to have him out to the West, which he loved, to participate in those passions of his, which we shared, and which he was instrumental in not acquainting me with, but in teaching me how to most enjoy. How's that? Teaching me skills that otherwise I probably would not have acquired. And, you know, years went by, and another year went by, and I kept thinking about it, and I kept telling myself, I'll do it next year, I'll do it next fall, I'll do it next summer, I'll do it next hunting season. It was always, you know, mañana. Well, anyway, Uncle Harold died, had a heart attack, and he was only 76, which in my book is kind of young, you know, particularly in today's day and age. 70s are the 40s if you're in shape. And I have often thought about him and the fact that I did not get him out here for that magic week or two that we could have spent together. And, you know, then his death precluded that option. So I just want to remind you that when you get the chance to spend time with people you care for, and I understand it's difficult, trust me, more than anybody you folks could ever listen to, I get what it is to have a time crunch. Trust me, that's the truth. But you know what? You got to just put it aside. And you will be thrilled that you did. You will not have the guilt of not being at work for 2 days, not being at the office, not being at the store, not doing whatever your normal busy routine is. And you'll feel damn good about yourself and life after you invest that tiny little bit of time connecting or reconnecting, or shall we say maintaining a connection with people who mean something to you. Because if you really boil it down, folks, we all have a lot of acquaintances, right? People we know, we might know their name, we wave at them, we do this, we do that, we might involve ourselves in banter or small talk with them. But in the end, you really only have your family, and if you're really lucky, one or two, maybe three really close friends. Remember that time is finite. Make use of it. All right, so those are Reed, your erstwhile host's quote-unquote stories for this morning. Now let's get into the less pleasant aspects of this broadcast, which is the news. Oh my, what a friggin' week. And you know, I've been out of the loop because of book signings and stuff. I haven't really been able to read all the stuff that I usually read in a given week between radio shows. I've been able to tune in TV just here and there. I haven't been able to hear much because some of these remote parts of these western states, when you're driving from a population area to another population area, which, by the way, could be 10,000 people at either town, you don't even have AM radio reception. But nonetheless, despite my forced lack of attention to current events over the last week, let me tell you the things that I was tracking. And I'm going to do this really quick. I'm going to try and keep two or three sentences on each of these probably 30 matters, virtually all of which you haven't heard about. I guarantee it, because the press is too busy with their being the press thing. Let's talk about, number one, emerging markets. Now, there's emerging markets that are starting to crater around the planet. Some of the most noticeable are Venezuela, Argentina. They've cratered several times in the last century. Some of the countries in Asia, Thailand and Vietnam. These countries are kind of staggering because they're getting hit with a double whammy. Follow me on this. All these countries have been propped up because of a redistribution of wealth from the United States, the wealthiest country in the world, to all these other places. And it's been accomplished, of course, by foreign aid, billions and billions and billions of wasted dollars in foreign aid. But it's been accomplished by us running these huge trade deficits. Because what in effect we've been doing is shipping out $700, $800, $900 billion a year from our pockets to the pockets of others, many of them emerging nations. Not only, they're not getting hit by a double whammy, not only is Trump basically turning off those spigots, or shall we say, eliminating those spigots with his tariffs to protect American workers and American jobs and American wages, and American products. But in addition, The Fed, and I did a show on this, just put in Federal Reserve in the search bar. I believe it will come up. The Fed is tightening. Number one, it's raising interest rates, as you know. Number two, as it does so, it is what's called trimming its balance sheet. The $4 trillion or so in bonds, I did a whole show on this. You should listen to it. It's fascinating. The $4 trillion or so in United States Treasury security. Understand, the Fed turns to the Treasury and says, print money. The Treasury prints money, and the Fed goes out and uses that money to buy our own bonds. That's kind of a scary concept, isn't it? Well, now the Fed is no longer buying bonds and T-bills. Now they are net liquidators of bonds and T-bills. And being net liquidators means they're taking money out of the money supply. There is less money to circulate around the globe. Let's face it, the less money there is to circulate around the globe, the less money there is to flow out to these emerging markets. At the same time, their ability to sell products to Americans is being hampered by the tariffs and the trade imbalances that Trump is trying to correct. The result is you have a number of emerging market countries, Argentina, Greece, Venezuela, several of the smaller countries in Southeast Asia, countries in Africa. I mean, there's a number of them. You have them beginning to sweat bullets about being able to service their sovereign debt. In other words, their bonds, their equivalents, anyway, of our bonds and T-bills and those type of financial instruments, and the amounts that they owe the International Monetary Fund, the United Nations, or other creditor nations. The result is I wouldn't call it an earthquake yet, but there's a tremor that's running through the emerging markets around the planet. And the tremor is they're scaling back, they're tightening up, they're trying to figure out how to make their debt payments. Some of them have already been to the IMF trying to get new special loan terms, etc. And all these countries, Greece and Argentina and Venezuela and Thailand and Vietnam, all these countries, as things become tighter for them, could very well default on their debts, which would cause, well, I'm not sure it would be a crisis like 2008, but it would be a big, big, big wave in the markets. You couple that with the debt. We have new record levels of consumer debt in the United States, new record levels of credit card debt. We're talking trillions, by the way, folks. This is not billions. This is trillions of dollars. New record levels in all those quotients. We have a new record level in national debt. That is the amount of money that the government owes, the primary debt, $21 trillion. New record levels in unfunded liabilities, another, depending upon who you talk to, $120 to $200 trillion. All this stuff's going to come to a head, folks. You ought to listen to my, if you didn't, listen to my show, which was 6 reasons the price of your home is going to decline and what you can do about it. Just, you know, put in home price declines in the search bar. It ought to come up. You need to keep your eye on this. This is another canary I'm going to add to your economic coal mine, which, by the way, is another show that was really, really, really popular from about 4 or 5 months ago. If you put in canaries in the economic coal mine, it should come right up for you. The next thing we're going to talk about is Turkey. And by the way, Turkey is a perfect example of one of these markets that's beginning to get in serious trouble because of the double whammy of the tariffs, number one, and the Fed tightening, number two, and in Turkey's case, number three, sanctions. Trump is putting the screws to them for a number of different reasons. And it couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of radical Islamists, because that's what Erdogan, the president, is. A good buddy of Barack Obama's, by the way. Gee, big surprise. Watch what's happening with Turkey, folks, and Argentina and Greece. Keep your eyes on European gross domestic product. It's literally down to just a couple of tenths of a percent positive right now. Remember, we're at like 4%, give or take, in the United States. Europe is like at 2 or 3 tenths of 1%. Down from last quarter, which was like 4 tenths of 1%. There's a lot of lines converging in the heavens. and you want to watch those lines like a hawk. Then we have the Chinese military. Oh, yes, the Chinese military. Let's see. Number one, they're landing long-range bombers on those islands that they built on Barack Obama's watch in the South China Sea, claiming, you know, hundreds of square miles of oil-rich sea grounds and interrupting international commerce and controlling, about two-thirds of the trade, or those waters control about two-thirds of the trade between North America and Europe and Asia. And, of course, Barry didn't do squat. Well, we're challenging them back. Now, one of these days, and by the way, at the same time, the Russians are flying, they've resumed flying Tupolev bombers. These are nuclear-capable bombers, literally just out of our airspace, 12 miles off the coast of Alaska, doing exercises. So there's a lot of things happening on the military, the geo-military fronts, with both Russia and particularly China, which the press is not covering, but it bears watching. It definitely bears watching. The next thing we're going to talk about are the tariffs. Now, everybody was screaming and yelling about Trump doing the tariffs and, you know, China's going to kick our butt on tariffs and blah, blah, blah. Well, here's what's really happening. And this is good news. The Canadians and the Mexicans are caving. You'll probably see a new, very beneficial, and certainly far better NAFTA agreement than we've had in the past. China's growth is slowing dramatically. The United States tariffs, I mean, this is economic warfare, folks. And I don't care what the press calls it or what the president calls it or what his economic advisors call it. This is hardball economics to the point of confrontation. China's losing that battle. Russia is losing that battle. In fact, every country against whom we have lodged these tariffs, against whom we have counterattacked on trade after being taken advantage of for literally 30 years, every one of them is slowly either on its knees or sinking to its knees. I think you're going to see some amazing new trade deals worked out, and I would project for you that our trade imbalance next year will no longer be $800 billion like last year, which was really the last year of Obama's reign of terror, reign of anti-American terror, I ought to correct. You're going to see it down to $400, maybe $200, maybe even $100 billion, a huge decrease. Go, Trump, go. Now we're going to talk about Keith Ellison. I've talked to you about Keith Ellison before, the second in command of the DNC, almost was elected chairman of the DNC, a Sharia law follower, a radical Islamist dressed up in Western clothes, a former congressman from Minnesota, scary thought. He has won the Democratic primary by 30 points. The Democratic primary for Attorney General of Minnesota. I can't even imagine Minnesota certifying votes after he's elected, but that's fine. So Minnesota's in the process, or Minnesota Democrats are in the process of nominating this Yehu, this Islamist, this anti-American guy, to the Secretary of State position in a rather important state. Hold on a sec. My microphone is not doing good things this morning. I'm going to do a little adjustment. There we go. Hopefully that'll hold. And if there's some different modulations in this show, for those of you, well, I guess all of you, who's ever listening to this, if there are different modulations, my apologies, but that, folks, is the way it is on the road. I really don't have the benefit of a producer with me, and it's kind of raw footage that go back to the producers, and they have to do a good job editing, which, by the way, they do. Thank you, producers. Okay, so we've talked about the Chinese military. We just talked about the tariffs, which I think are having a hugely detrimental effect on our economic adversaries, and which are going to result in large economic gains for us. America first. Let's talk about the media. The media is sinking to new lows every day. You know, they got Brennan, who is a pompous, egomaniac, communist-voting, Muslim indoctrinated sympathizer. I mean, I can't tell you how low a life John Brennan, Obama's CIA director, is. By the way, I'm not making any of this up. He converted to Islam in Riyadh in 2009. The guy didn't have any intelligence experience when Obama appointed him. It was all political machinations and Obama wanting to extend both the deep state and the shadow government he unfortunately so cleverly constructed while he was in office. And John Brennan is a political animal, anti-American, communist voting. I mean, I go down the list. I really don't like the guy. He makes my skin crawl. He has also lied repeatedly to Congress under oath, broken a number of laws, and I can go on down the road. Well, President Trump stripped him of his security clearance. Now, why the hell this guy kept a security clearance after he left the CIA is beyond me. And there's other folks that are going to feel Mr. Trump's wrath, too, and he has that right under the Constitution. But Brennan can't seem to keep his mouth shut. He's been, like, on every media left-wing outlet spewing his nonsense over the last week and pretending that the revocation of his security pass, if you will, his security clearance doesn't mean anything to him. But actually it does, folks, because, see, he's getting paid big money by CNN to blast off his far-left, anti-Trump, anti-American thoughts, which are just now manifesting themselves after he was CIA director for 6 or 7 years, whatever it was. And one of the reasons CNN has him on it and is paying him is because he has a security clearance and he's been leaking information to them. So it will have an effect on his pocketbook, and it couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Let's talk about the tech companies and tech censorship. So the tech companies, folks, are running amok. Literally one day this last week, all of them, all the big five, Facebook, Twitter, Apple, Google, and one other one, YouTube, which is really Google owned, and YouTube on the same day, obviously pre-planned and coordinated, which in and of itself, I would contend, is a breach of antitrust laws, and in and of itself points to the fact these behemoths need to be broken up by the government so that power is not so centrally controlled, particularly over our thoughts, minds, and speech and expression. These guys decided to come together and to ban Alex Jones. Alex Jones is a commentator whose, we'll call it station, is InfoWars, known as InfoWars. And listen, some of the stuff that Alex talks about, I scratch my head on. But you know, there's other things that Alex speaks about and does research on that I applaud. Be it whether you applaud the guy, you are on the fence about the guy, or you can't stand the guy's guts, the fact that the big tech giants could literally shut down all his communication channels with no notice in a matter of hours, completely coordinated, ought to scare the holy hell out of you. It ought to scare the holy hell out of every American. I know it would make the founders roll over in their graves. It is a direct infringement on the First Amendment. I mean, real life, true to form, direct infringement, and it is intentioned as such. This is not some mistake. At the same time, Facebook banned Bridget Gabriel. She's the gal, you may have seen her on TV from time to time. She kind of talks with an Arabic accent. She's kind of high-pitched and rather strident. I personally don't like listening to her, although I think her ideas are right on about radical Islam. She has the experience, since she is a Muslim herself, and has seen this firsthand in the Mideast. And she is one of those warriors, along with the Clarion Project, and I've interviewed those people, if you go back in the archives. She is one of those people who completely and without remorse and relentlessly bongs the alarm gongs over jihad, radical Islam, and civilizational jihad. I think that she's terrific for what she does, what she thinks, and her viewpoints. It's just kind of difficult to listen to her. But she also got banned by these big five last week in another concerted effort to literally, I don't mean stifle or alter or change or mute, but to completely wipe out conservative think, conservative expression, conservative speech. Very scary. Let's talk about Bruce Orr. So, you know, the list of scumbags, anti-American, traitorous scumbags that are involved in this ever-deepening, widening, and ever more revealed anti-American, anti-Trump, anti-you and me, anti-our votes, anti-a duly elected president, and anti-an election process, becoming more apparent every day. But we are finding out more about each of them every day. Number one, we find out Rod Rosenstein's wife has now, shall we say, benefited with money because of Rosenstein's position. Well, I'll have more on that for you in the next couple of weeks. And we have Bruce Orr, who is the number four. I talked about this last week. The number four at the Department of Justice, working under, Sally Yates. Ha! One of the signers of the fraudulent FISA warrant to which it was attached, the bogus Steele Fusion GPS dossier. You know, I mean, the whole thing stinks. And that Bruce Orr's wife, Nellie Orr, worked for Fusion GPS. Here's how it worked. Hillary and Hillary's campaign sent like $6 million to Perkin Coie, a law firm. One of the crooked attorneys there then siphoned the money out to Christopher Steele, who was working for Fusion GPS, who then contracted with Christopher Steele, a former British agent, a foreign national, exactly what the Constitution precludes, who then went to Russia and built this fake dossier, all the while expressing his hatred for Trump and his love of Hillary, along with the rest of the clowns, Strzok, Page, McCabe, Comey, you name it, at the Department of, and Bruce Orr, at the Department of Justice, to get Trump, either before the election to stop him or after the election to get rid of him. The bottom line of this is that we now find out that in addition to all these egregious acts and lack of acts, Mr. Orr and his wife Nellie, who was working for Fusion GPS while all this was going on, have been, why don't we say their bank accounts have grown mysteriously during the course of all this. How's that? I'll let your imagination run rampant, and I'll have more details for you in the next week or so. By the way, Orr and several other people are scheduled to testify pursuant to subpoenas to several of the congressional oversight committees on August 28th. What do you want to bet they don't show? Want to bet? Yeah. You know, our Congress has sat on its butt for so long, has been cowardly for so long, it doesn't know how to fight. And every time they rattle their saber and then don't pull it, every time they let their little legal saber flash in the sunlight but don't run it through the person who ignored their edicts that are constitutional powers they are exercising, the more they undermine their own power in the future. I mean, it's really pretty sad to see. Let's talk about... And by the way, I think you're going to see, Bruce, I think you're going to see a bunch of people hammered. I'm going to repeat again. After the midterm elections, and it almost doesn't matter who wins, I think Trump, particularly if you've seen some of his last few press conferences and tweets, I think he's going to lower the boom. I mean, I think it's going to be ugly for all these people who have been engaged in all these nefarious activities. So Bruce Orr and Ellie not only broke a number of laws with all their Fusion GPS games, but it apparently they got wealthy doing so, which breaks another bunch of laws. I'll keep you tuned. Let's talk about the Manafort trial. So Paul Manafort was, as you know, Trump's campaign chairman for about 60 to 90 days. I don't think it was more than 90 days. I think it was closer to 60. And was right through that time period in which the Republican National Convention was held. So Manafort is on trial by Mueller's left-wing team in a district court, in the United States federal district court in Washington, D.C., or right in the outskirts. And the judge, Judge Ellis, is a tough guy. And he does not like the prosecution. I've given you some of his quotes before. You've probably heard others in other newscasts. I'm not going to repeat them here. But he's holding Mueller's team's feet to the fire. Paul Manafort has been treated very unjustly. Listen, if you committed tax fraud, you know, the way you do it is you have the IRS come in, you do an audit, you assess the penalties, you assess the interest, and he pays the tax. No, they didn't do it this way. They slapped him in solitary confinement, unable to talk to his attorneys, literally right before the trial, which started, I believe, August 26th or thereabouts. July 26th or thereabouts. And Mueller obviously hoping to make this guy, as Sean Hannity would say, either sing or compose. I think the judge used those exact same words. Well, we come to find out that the judge has received a number of physical injury and death threats and is now being protected by U.S. Marshals. This is your peaceful left, folks. You know what I mean? They're the peaceful left. And it's not, he's now being guarded by federal agents. But APP, you know, you can't make this stuff up. The press, I'm going to divert my speech here just for a little bit. Just yesterday, or maybe it was Thursday, the press around the country, and we're talking 300 or so newspapers, all ran editorials blasting Trump, saying that they're not the enemy of the people. You know, the media is just not the enemy of the people. And additionally saying that, how do I phrase this? Well, that everybody on the right is wrong and dumb, and everybody on the left is right and just wildly intelligent. I mean, that's just who they are. Now that we know the judge has received a number of threats to his life, and he's now protected by U.S. Marshals, I think you can tell how divisive this nonsense trial. It's total nonsense. The crime is nonsense. The potential punishment, it's all nonsense. It's all politics, folks. But the judge, after, shall we say, slapping the Mueller team, the special prosecutor's team, in the head with a sledgehammer in front of the jury a few times, the judge has now revealed that he's been the target of threats and has federal protection. In the meantime, CNN, AP, and a bunch of other left-wing Looney Tunes news outlets, they filed a motion in this guy's court saying that they wanted to unseal the names of the jurors. Now, this is in the middle of the jury deliberations, folks. Why do you think the press, the left-wing press, wanted to get the names of the jurors? Do you think there could be some influencing, or as they call it, witness or jury tampering that had been planned by the press? Oh, heaven forbid, they wouldn't do that, would they? To get their desired outcome, which right now, by the way, is the time of this broadcast, is about 50-50. Paul Manafort may be a free man, which would not break my heart. And once again, I have nothing against Paul Manafort. I have not met him. I don't know if he committed the tax fraud in the year 2005, I mean, you know, 14 years ago, or not. If he did, he needs to pay the penalty, pay the interest, and get it right. And if he didn't, he needs to be left alone. He deserves to be left alone. Anyway, the judge denied the motion, and in doing so, revealed the fact that he was now under physical threat with federal protection, and he wanted to make sure that the jurors did not face the same threatening situations, shall we say, during their deliberations in this trial. Well, you know, CNN and AP are up in arms, and, you know, this Republican judge is blocking information from the American people, and blah, 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 blah. You know, the usual nonsense from them. I don't know how that's going to play out, but basically Ellis told him to shove it. He said his ruling stands, and if you don't like it, you can bring it up to the federal appeals court level. I don't know if they're stupid enough to do that or not, folks, because if they do, then they will cement all these benefits for us. In other words, the more these folks put pressure. Let me step back. Have you ever had tape on a table that has bubbles in it, and wherever you put your finger on the bubble moves somewhere else or breaks into the smaller bubbles? Well, that's kind of what we got going on right here. And the whole idea of the Manafort trial and all the attendant leaks and nonsense in his treatment have all been politically motivated. And I think more and more people are waking up to it. I think the whole Manafort thing, everybody thought Robert Mueller was brilliant. I'd say what's more realistic is that Robert Mueller should never have brought the case to begin with. Should have turned it over to the IRS, who would have taken it all from there with a lot less hassle and a lot less, shall we say, damage to America's psyche, which is about all this trial is accomplishing. All right, we're going to move right along here. Oil. I forecast to you at the beginning of the year, oil would be in a dramatic ascent over the course of this year. I was actually a year late. I projected that in my annual prognostication show in January of 2017 for the year 2017. Well, I was a year early, but here it is. And, you know, oil has kind of taken a slight tumble backwards, folks. Reserves, that is the amount of oil that's backing up refinery processes, actually increased over the last few weeks, kind of surprising economists. So we've seen a little dip in oil prices. But also, as I projected, Iran is threatening to close the Straits of Hormuz by sinking a ship, or who knows what they're going to do. And that's kind of making the oil markets jittery. And in fact, you know, they're just crazy enough to try and do it. China is playing games with what type of oil they're buying and where they're buying it from in response to Trump's tariffs. Russia is pumping out all sorts of oil, and that pipeline just got more or less completed to Germany. And I talked about that over the last two shows. I mean, it's just outrageous stuff. We're paying to protect Germany. They don't pay their fair share into NATO, even though they're Europe's strongest, largest, most economically vibrant country. And the very country against which we're supposed to be protecting them, Russia, is where they're buying all their oil, which, by the way, also undermines American sanctions against Russia. You're going to see oil flatten and maybe even decrease in the near term, but buckle up your seats for what's going to happen to the prices of oil come this winter, or if there's any geopolitical, why don't we say, if geopolitical instability moves from instability to outright interference with oil markets, either by military action, terrorism, or who knows what. In other words, higher gas prices are coming your way, even though you've had a breather for just a little bit in the rise that they've enjoyed since January of 2018. Now we're going to go into really rapid stuff. I mean, just unbelievable stuff. Number one, Cuomo, the governor of New York, he does this speech. He says, "Make America great." America was never that great. I'm not making this up. That was actually a speech. You can Google it up. And that kind of shows you what the true mentality, this guy is a lefty, lefty, lefty. He is the governor that sued the NRA in New York. I talked a little bit about that over the last several shows. Basically, New York has sued the NRA so that they can't offer NRA insurance, gun-related insurance, any product, services, education, you name it, in the state of New York. They're going to lose, but in the meantime, for a year or two, NRA will be blocked from doing much in New York. The same Cuomo is the guy who just said in a speech that America was never that great. You know, this is the progressive mindset, folks. Sometimes they slip and they say what the real truth is. This is one of those occasions. Then you have Antifa. Antifa violence, they took over the city hall in Portland. There was another place, I forget exactly where it was, doesn't matter. They beat up two Trump supporters. There's been, shall we say, fairly violent physical altercations at several other locations around the country between conservatives or conservative groups, basically middle class America, and the hooded little monsters, little spoiled whatever they are, in Antifa. Antifa, over the last week, feeling its oats, because Congress can't seem to designate them as a domestic terror organization, which is exactly what they are, they've been sending out communications to their brothers everywhere, saying that they need to get armed and get ready for the big fight. Okay, I think the big fight is against, like, you and me and, you know, all us deplorables and bubbas, who all happen to be armed, by the way. That's the first thing Antifa did. Then they beat up these Trump supporters. Then they took over the city hall in Portland. I mean, they are the epitome of the violent left, which is one of those sections I have in on the website, the On the Right Side website. You can read the last week's craziness, radical Islam. I mean, read it. It'll speak for itself. So, Antifa. And keep your eye on that, because one of the things that their leaders are now calling on is that they need to use bullets to get across their point. In other words, Antifa is trying to stir up all sorts of hatred, animus, and in fact confrontation within families, within communities, within the country as a whole. And since it's not working all that great for them, suddenly they want a gun too. So, it's rather amazing. And then we have Jason Johnson on MSNBC, who is justifying Antifa violence, particularly taking over City Hall, etc., in Portland, as the only way, as an expression of free speech, and the only way that they can catch people's attention. Well, you know, I guess what would you expect from CNN, huh? In Vermont, a mentally ill, I mean literally adjudicated, prognosticated, whatever it happened to be, the doctor, the judge, or the two of them. This guy is not pronounced, but diagnosed as mentally disabled. Okay? And in addition to being mentally disabled, he also happens to be a transgender man. Now, I want you to think about this for a moment. A mentally ill transgender man in Vermont wins the Democratic nomination to be the governor of Vermont. I mean, and like wins it by a number of points. Now, I really don't know what to tell you about this, other than I'm still scratching my head. And maybe it's a chance to get a Republican governor in the seat, because I have no idea what this political strategy is, but I just don't think it's a good one. It's not a good one for the Democratic Party, which I couldn't care less about. It's not a good one for these actors and or actresses. It is beyond comprehension, actually. Beyond comprehension. We'll be keeping an eye on that as we get closer to November. Oh, yeah. And then there was an article published on Yahoo. It must have slipped through all the censorship they've been doing of everybody else. There was an article that slipped through on Yahoo. Let me give you the exact, see if I can find the exact headline here for you. Let's see. I'm scrolling through links. Antifa mob from Vermont. Yahoo. Oh. So, Yahoo published and then deleted, when they realized what they had published, an article. Russia collusion investigation. It was Hillary Clinton all the time. So here we have big tech at work again, not only to block certain content, but to make sure that certain content can't be disseminated if it has to be at all against any progressive figure or any progressive ideal. Then we had, let's see, oh, we had a student who was denied admission, the straight-A student, denied admission to a college because he was a follower of Alex Jones and InfoWars. So he can no longer attend this Ivy League, just below Ivy League, institution of higher education. I find that remarkable. This is the tolerant left, folks. They're also tolerant. In Sweden, so all sorts of civil unrest, everything, all of it attributable to the Muslim horde that has invaded Sweden. Rapes are up 20-30x. Are you listening, ladies? 20-30x rapes are up. And Sweden is literally reeling under the weight of all these Islamic refugees who refuse to assimilate. They kind of find a spot, get a piece of land, and camp out. I mean, that's what they're doing. And then we have, by camp out, I mean basically occupy. It's Muslim hordes occupying Sweden. That's what I'm trying to get at here. And they had another incident just over the last few days where a bunch of Muslim youths, you know, teens, late teens, wearing masks, actually torched 100 cars in the no-go zones. You can't make this stuff up, folks. They torched 100 cars, and it was well planned. Makes you think that maybe somebody else is pulling the strings here and we're just kind of keeping our mouth shut. Then we have 300 newspapers, 300, that got together and did anti-Trump editorials literally yesterday, Friday, which I think is going to backfire on them big time. They're anti-Trump being the fact that no way on God's green earth, the water underneath God's green earth, or the blue sky above God's green earth could turn their minds. I mean, these 300 newspapers are hell-bent to get Trump, and they all coordinated and colluded on this show, if you will, of strength and fortitude of the President of the United States. So I think that'll be a backfire for him. Who knows at this point? I have an article posted under family safety. And it has to do with the pros and cons of open carry firearms. It's well worth your reading if your interest is Second Amendment concerns and Second Amendment rights. You remember that baker in Colorado? We're off to a new quick subject. That baker in Colorado who went all the way to the Supreme Court of the United States, and won, because he didn't want to bake a cake. He'd sell him anything else in the bakery, you know, but he was not going to decorate a cake, which is his artistic license, for the people, in the story, so to speak. This poor Christian baker, after winning all of these court battles and finally have it behind him, he actually gets targeted again by Colorado this past week, trying to shut him down yet again. Do you remember that trip that we all took? 600 miles, me and the kids and all this kind of stuff I broadcast from along the way. Well, you know. The bottom line of all this, folks, is that these newspapers have done nothing but underline and highlight the fact that they all are groupthink, think as one, anti-Trump, anti-American. That's all this 300 collective editorial pages around the country has accomplished. It's actually quite humorous. And then we have, let me scroll down here. Oh yeah, so you know that compound in New Mexico where the two radical Islamists were training kids, who had been mostly kidnapped, to be school shooters. I mean, we're talking about like 5 to 9 year old kids learning how to use AK-47s and put together explosives. Well, we come to find out this week that the FBI knew about this for like a month and did nothing. It was finally the local police and sheriffs that had to go in and get the deal done, arrest these people, etc. And now we find out that once that was done, rather than preserve the evidence, I digress. Just this last week, a judge in New Mexico literally let the head Sharia guy at this compound in New Mexico that was training little kids, mostly kidnapped, to be school shooters. This New Mexico judge lets this guy go. I want you to think about that. Oh, yes. Yes, he's an Obama appointee, this judge. Federal judge. It's terrific. He lets this monster go, and the FBI goes in and destroys the compound, which does what? Oh, destroyed all the evidence. You think that was an accident? I mean, the FBI is not that stupid, are they? Is there a reason that they did that? I'll let you think about those till we come back to it in the next few weeks. Peter Strzok, that treasonous, venomous, anti-American FBI agent, the guy who got everything started. You know, I've done a number of shows on this, so I'm not going to repeat it here. But Peter Strzok, pretty sure you know his name by now, he actually put up a GoFundMe page on Facebook. Not on Facebook, but on the web. Believe it or not, he raised $290,000 in like a day and a half. That's how many Looney Tunes there are in the United States, folks. This guy is a Looney Tune next to a Looney Tune wrapped in a Looney Tune, and they'll be on the road early. The bottom line of all this is that I'm reading these headlines right here. 290 grand this scumbag trader earned off of GoFundMe to try and cover his legal expenses and, in his own words, to make up for my improperly lost salary at the Justice Department. Aw, poor Peter. Poor Peter. Yeah, you should have been indicted by now, buddy. That's what you should be getting. The stuff you're worried about, Mr. Strzok, your GoFundMe page, etc., I guarantee you, it's you're just playing fire, man, because I'm telling you, Mr. Strzok, Mr. Trump's coming for you. You can bet on that. In the meantime, you got your $290,000 of GoFundMe. Wow. I just can't believe some Americans. Oh, and here's that story on Antifa. I'll quote you the headline. Antifa votes bullets for political enemies. That kind of gives you the idea. You know, the anti-violent left. Yeah, you bet. Then there's a story of, this is one of thousands, a legal alien comes into the U.S. with a pretend daughter. Not his daughter. He just used her to get into the desk. And, well, why don't we just say that the poor little girl was raped repeatedly by this illegal alien. She had no familial contact or connection to him whatsoever. And what it shows is another gaping hole in the systems at our borders. I mean, it's just unbelievable. It also shoots to hell the entire left narrative about how these people are refugees and this and that and Crimea River. Let me read you some other headlines here. Facebook censors Benghazi hero John Tegan. That's right. John Tegan's page, the hero of Benghazi, saved all those American lives, got pretty stove in himself, and basically, shall we say that Facebook's on the rampage. How's that? I'll just say Facebook's on the rampage. I'm giving you one example. Then, the tech giants are trying to ban all gun-related ads, websites, etc. The Second Amendment deal, folks, this is a real deal. I mean, the Second Amendment is under huge pressure, and so is the First. I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't think I'd like to live without a gun. I certainly wouldn't like to live without a gun in, shall we say, Denver. And here we are. all the gun stuff coming back. By the way, the progressives already started their dirty tricks, right? CNN Trump voter who said he regrets voting for a monster is found out to be a Democrat who voted for Hillary. Well, that's about right. Here's another one. You'll love this. Leftists reimagine Anne Frank as an illegal immigrant. I mean, say what? Wow. Unbelievable. Perez, the chairman of the DNC, you know, Democratic National Committee, has come out and said that he thinks that illegal aliens should have the vote. So once again, you know, the left is showing their true colors. And once again, nobody's going to be getting the vote, at least not on my watch, and certainly not in Wyoming. Then we have a guy by the name of D.L. Hewley, pretty well-known lib, like progressive-type lib, and let's see if I can find this exact headline for you, because it's just too good to pass up. Too good to pass up. Oh, yes, D.L. Hewley. White men don't get to decide what racism is, just so you know, folks. If you're black, it's okay. You can define racism. If you're white, you don't go out in the sun, and you stay there more. Let me give you the last few rat-a-tat-tat coming right at you fast headlines. D.L. Hewley, a noted lefty, has now written an article this past week, "White Men Don't Get to Decide What Racism Is." So there you have it, white men. Take that. Then we have acquitted Bundy defendants file $60 million lawsuit. Remember the Bundy thing down in Nevada, the big standoff, bunch of armed ranchers led by the Bundy family against a bunch of armed BLM. It was finally resolved relatively peacefully. I think one guy got killed and one guy got wounded in that whole mess down there. And the guy who got killed was killed like after he was in custody under suspicious circumstances. But Bundy, being acquitted, is now suing the state and the feds for like $60 million. So, go Bundy, go. Go Bundy, go. Then the next one is Florida sheriff says Parkland massacre could have been avoided if someone had a gun. Gee, big surprise. That's exactly right. And here's what's worse, Mr. Police Chief. One of your officers was on the outside of that building during the entire shooting in that high school with a gun and never went in. Anyway, you won't want to spend a lot of time arguing with this sheriff because he's a political animal. Make sure, folks, that you check out all the articles that have been painstakingly posted so perfectly by my producers. I think that alliteration, I got a bunch of P's in there. And particularly, if you would, check out the politics section, folks. I believe there's either a 4X or 5X matching donation sheet in there for conservatives. If you put in $1, that actually becomes $6. That's $5 plus your $1. So if you put in $50, you actually just raised $300 for Republican candidates for the House and Senate. Do so. I mean, you don't have to put in $50. Put in 10. Put in 20. If you can afford it, put in 50. If you really got some flush cash and you want to make a difference in your own life, your own freedoms, and the freedoms of your children and your children's children, put in a 50. The midterms are now like coming up on 80-some-odd days away. This is a big deal. Get some skin in the game. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. I will talk to you next week.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.